turn it off.
Okay, you want to talk and see how...
Yeah. Okay, my name is Werner Gingerbach. I was connected with the Pyramid operation as early as 1939. And around September, month of September, Pyramid, they gave several research and development contracts to the Electrical Institute at the Hochschule in Darmstadt. One of our first tasks was to design special instrumentation for the supersonic wind tunnel at Peenemünde. I was working together with Kurt Debus, who, as I was assistant instructor at the University of Technische Hochschule in Darmstadt, and we were jointly assigned to this instrumentation development program at Peenemünde. In 1942, Peenemünde required more manpower, and I was selected by the Institute to move to Peenemünde to accept an assignment there. My first assignment there was test engineer, electrical test engineer, at the Prüfstand number 7. In this assignment, I was in charge of the electrical network preparations at the test tent, all the checkout operations, and was in charge of a troop of various engineers and technicians which had to perform this particular preparatory task for first the static firings, which took place on Prüfstand 7, and later on the launches which took place. I remember in 1942 we had the second A4 on the test stand. The first one was blown up accidentally prior to my coming to Peenemünde. The time in which we were able to prepare the first A4 for static firing was rather short, amazingly short, considering that it was a first time a test of a complete A4 missile on a static test stand. The first test, as far as I remember, was quite successful, and was leading right away in the preparation of the first launch, which took place, if I remember right, in about June of this year, 42. You probably have those data. I can't remember exactly those data anymore. But this shows somewhat the time we had available for getting through the real basic checkout of the A4 to the time we had enough confidence to launch the vehicle. So we're talking actually only about several months to accomplish this whole effort. So the pressure was tremendous on the people to meet this kind of a schedule. It was actually an operation around the clock, 24 hours, and most of us spent 16 to 18 hours on the test stand and had to be also available during the night if any emergencies or any fails occurred. I guess in this area you have probably enough material on the operations there on the test stand. I don't think they have to get too deeply involved in that. After about 50 months, I would say, I developed some health problems and I was had to go on leave for a while. And when I returned, I was reassigned to take over the prototype production of the ground support equipment, the motor ground support equipment, which was developed parallel to the stationary launch equipment. And this happened, I think, I was reassigned about 3-4 weeks prior to the air attack by the British.
That was in August 43.
The attack was in August 43. Mm-hmm. At this particular air raid, we lost all our shop facilities, our supplies, and much of our test equipment and tools and so on, and we had to actually to start all over to rebuild our capability. We got orders in a few days to move out of the Peenemünde complex, and I think our first attempt was to set up an operation in nearby Wolgast, which was on the mainland, north of the island of Usedom. Mm-hmm. We were still in the early preparation of setting up new facilities there when we received orders from Berlin.
Wolgast,
yes. To move with those facilities which were critical underground. Early September, I took off with Dr. Steinhoff in an airplane to contact certain district military district commanders in western Germany, close to the Rhine River, to help us in locating underground facilities. We looked at several mines which were not in operation, which could have been converted for this purpose, and we looked at various other places, particular unused railroad tunnels. We finally found a number of railroad tunnels in the Aar River Valley, at the vicinity of Marine Tower, close to, I believe this is the correct name, close to Bad Neuenahr. We selected mainly two tunnels. I recall the lengths. One was about roughly 1 mile long, or about 1.6 kilometers. And the other one, I would say, about 1 kilometer long. When we arrived there to take a look at the potential possibilities for an underground installation, we found that the tenants were used by a stringer. He was growing mushrooms. We decided that this was an ideal location, particularly because of the available facilities to accommodate our people. There were quite a number of hotels which were not occupied at this time, and other places which we felt would be able to accommodate the people, which eventually had to be moved in this area. But this was one of the prime consideration to go in the area where we could house the personnel.
Tell us a little bit more about the Spaniards, mushrooms. What did it look like when you got there and how you...
This was a very, very primitive operation in there. There were only a few electric lights in there. It was quickly dark, and actually I think mushrooms have to grow in a dark environment, a moist environment. The tunnels were very moist. The water was dripping down from the ceiling, and we knew we would have considerable modifications to make in order to protect the equipment, which had to be prepared in those tunnels. So we decided to move out the mushrooms, operate the mushroom operation, and we were flooding the valley for about a week with mushrooms. Made the people very happy about it, because this was a delicatesse and was hardly available to the average citizen.
You also had some wines out there too.
So yes. The tunnels were located directly in the vine growing areas. We established our first base there, our first headquarters, in a winery school, which certainly was not anymore in operation during the war years, but it was a very, very nice facility, and which was well suited for accommodating some of our offices. Now, certainly we had to start practically with nothing there. So the first thing that we needed was to have electric light so we could start with the construction work. So I had to decide on finding a solution for that. So I decided to call the mayor of Neuenahr and told him I would need his street lights for illumination of the tunnels. He was naturally very upset about it, but I convinced him that for some time to come, he probably was not able to use the street lights anyway because of the daily placards. So we moved all the sent a crew of people, and they disassembled the street lights, including the cables and everything which was required to reinstall it in the tunnels, and this is the way we finally put enough light in there that we could start with the construction. So we cleaned out all the debris and those old tunnels and so on, and immediately moved construction work in there. We started in early October. Just shortly after we arrived there at the locality, and within less than a month, we had 1,600 construction workers in there. Most of them were Italians, which were put in to do this kind of construction work during the war years in Germany. The installation required the paving of the two tracks and a sealing of the walls. We used the gunite process and tried to seal the areas where the water was penetrating in, And in addition to that, because we were not able to seal it up completely, we had to build a large channel which was catching the water, which at the same time served as a duct for the air, which had to be blown in to provide fresh air in town. So this this worked out very well. The tunnel was well equipped. On one side, we had our shop facilities and the checkout equipment, and on the other spur or track side, we moved the vehicles in, which received their installation in there. When the vehicles left the other side of the tunnel, they were completely equipped and completely checked out and accepted by the military people. In addition to that, we had a complete communication center in there because we needed good telephone connections with Peenemünde as well as with several other army installations which were receiving some of the units.
You know, when these units were completed there, where were they normally shipped to? They were over the western?
They were picked up by the military, and we at this time did not know exactly where they went, because this was very much all classified and sensitive type of information. Also, the people which were moved in were not allowed really to correspond directly with their families. We had to send it to a special, how should I say,
a special mail unit?
Special mail unit, yes.
What kind of logistics problems
did you run
into for wiring?
Yes, Mark, this was an interesting thing. We solved some of all the problems there. Now, the first thing, we needed some office equipment because we lost everything. We lost our desk, we lost our typewriters, we lost everything. Well, I sent some scouts out to look around what anything was available, and we were very fortunate. We uncovered a very large warehouse which belonged to the chemical firm of Bayer Leverkusen, and they had everything you could think of and office equipment in there. Well, I got a few of my people and said, right, this seems to be the ideal place for us to get where we need. So I sent two trucks with people in there, and we surprised the guard there, and they told them their directions to get this office equipment. So we loaded at least two trucks with desks and typewriters and all other office equipment we needed. And next morning, I wasn't very much surprised. I had three lawyers in my office from Cologne, or Cologne, and complaining about my action. I told them, I said, that we have a very high priority project here, and I was very sorry. I had no other choice, and you get in contact with the district commander there, and I would also do the same thing and see how we can work this problem out. Well, they were quite mad and disappointed and left, and I think a few hours later I got a call from a very disturbed district commander and asked me what I had done there, because those people had also orders from higher echelons to relocate those kind of materials in case they had an emergency. So I told him, I say, if you can replace those furnitures, I would be willing to return it, because I need it on a temporary until you have organized new office equipment for me. And this was finally done. In about 3 weeks, he was able to replace this. Not equipment wasn't quite as nice as what we had taken out of the Leverkusen warehouse, but or the Bayer's Leverkusen warehouse, but at least it was sufficient to satisfy our needs. Another problem was really to get all the power supplies or to get the power lines in there, because we had a large power requirement for the work we were trying to perform in there. So I had to send some people out to organize a big transformer, which would finally supply us with the necessary power there. All those things were difficult. Everybody, certainly else, had also priorities and reasons.
Cut you, say, cut you. We're going to have to change the radio. Just cut you.